Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We continue today our look at the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and we're here today with Maureen Cannon from Notre Dame Preparatory School in Towson. Maureen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
Yeah. So tell us about NDP. It's been around for a long, long time and has an awesome reputation. Maybe for those who are unfamiliar with it, give us a sense for where it's located and the history of the school and what you think Notre Dame is most known for.
Sure. We are located in Towson, right off Hampton Lane. We've been around since 1873, educating girls to go out and transform the world. Right now, NDP teaches girls in grades 6 through 12. We provide a liberal arts education, but very rooted in tradition while very contemporary in education as well. We have strong math and science as well as English and social studies. It really is a very transformative education.
And the school hasn't always been located in Towson. You celebrated an anniversary a few years ago. It was a Baltimore location?
That's correct. So we actually started on the Charles Street campus where the university is today, Notre Dame of Maryland University. Mm-hmm. And we co-shared that campus for a very long time, really since 1873.
Yeah.
And then in the late 1950s, while the college was growing and the prep school was growing, we decided that it was time for the prep school to have its own space. And we found 60 acres off of Hampton Lane in Towson. And we opened our doors in 1960. And we're going to be celebrating our 55th year, I believe, this coming school year, so it's very exciting.
It's hard to believe. It seems like the 50th anniversary is just like
it really does, because I worked on it, and our director of communications really championed it, so it's been a blink of an eye.
That's great. Now, you mentioned the emphasis on some of the programs. I know the STEM and the STEAM Lab, and there are humanities programs, and there's a middle school program, so maybe just take us through some of those programs and what makes them so unique and special.
No, absolutely. I really love talking about our programs. We have a number of signature programs, and by that I mean these are programs that I think are very unique to NDP, especially in content and delivery. I'm going to start with our humanities. We're actually the only girls' school in the Baltimore area that has a formal humanities program, and what that means is it's an interdisciplinary approach to English, history, art, and religion. And our girls get to experience it in ninth grade through world cultures, and they see how disciplines interact with each other. There are a lot of similarities between art and history and the influence of subjects. So that's really a snapshot of our humanities program. And then the program starts in 10th grade and culminates senior year with this amazing capstone project. And they have a faculty mentor. It's really transformative for them. And it's a very college-type program.
That's college work right there.
It's very much college-style program. So that's exciting. When I talk to parents, I really, really emphasize our STEAM program. You know, STEM's been around for a really long time. We call it STEAM, which is STEM plus art.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have the strongest STEAM program in the area as well for our students. Our girls can really live it and experience all aspects of science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Our STEAM program is coordinated by a career engineer. So he spent many years in the workplace. But what it does is it allows him to bring the tangible into the classroom. Mm-hmm. So the girls don't only learn it by book and rote, but they get to experience it hands-on. And the opening of our STEAM Center just this past January gives them a space to do design and build projects. And it gives them a space to use our two 3D printers, which, by the way, the space station only has one, but we have two. I like to say that. And then actually, we just also put in a new instrument this coming school year within our STEAM program called a CNC, which is a computer numerical control router that really helps bring the students' 3D designs to life as well.
Wow.
So that's really unique and fun for our girls.
Yeah, and having access to somebody who's lived it and done it
mm-hmm.
on a day-to-day basis is really, a rare asset for students. So, and you can see some of the examples when you walk into the school in terms of the art projects and things. So it's
So when you come in our school, every piece of art that is on display is actually done by our students, and it's refreshed every year. So it's all student-driven. All the work we do is really student-driven and student-motivated.
And it's really impressive.
It is. Thank you. And I do want to just talk briefly about our middle level as well. That's for, you know, we have a great, unique middle level program for girls in grades 6 through 8. There are two hallmarks of a really strong middle school program. We have both the advisory model and the explore model. So the advisory is an extension of homeroom that allows the girls to really have a personal relationship, not just with their homeroom classmates, but also with their homeroom teacher. They come back together once a week and they'll do advisory projects together, whether it's service related or talk about age appropriate topics, how they're handling the transition to middle school and things like that. And then an explore program is, again, a really unique aspect of a strong middle level. We have it. The explore program is a non-graded opportunity for students every marking period to experience something different, whether it's through our STEAM program or through our music program. For example, our sixth graders, they actually will take a quarter of African drums. They'll learn to play the African drums. They'll learn about the culture, the history behind African drums. They'll learn the beats and things like that. We just introduced computational linguistics to our sixth grade STEAM Explorer program, in addition to the eighth grade STEAM that has an architecture and engineering component. And then we have lots of stuff in between. We teach our girls speech one and speech two so they can be excellent public speakers. Mm-hmm. So those are samples of our Explorer program.
So there's a lot of rigor in the middle school level.
It's rigor, but I'll tell you, it's very nurturing. I live it firsthand, also as a parent of two middle schoolers there. It's life-changing, and it's just the beginning. So I really love it.
That's awesome. Now, I know that the school at the high school level requires students to have a laptop when they come into the school, and one of the benefits is when they leave the school, it's theirs. How does the school implement technology in the classroom and just kind of the day-to-day level?
Technology's been enhancing the NDP education really since 2003. We went to a full wireless campus in 2006, and all of our freshmen are required to have a laptop device. And what it allows the girls to do is it just enhances their classroom experience. So if they're in freshman bio, they can plug into an electronic microscope right into their laptop, and it comes alive on their screen, whatever they're looking at or studying. Our teachers use Blackboard, which is actually a higher ed online platform. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a really glorified website. The teachers post all the information about their classes on website. It's a communication tool for the students. I see it firsthand. They can upload papers. They can upload homework assignments. They can download PowerPoints. It's a great test prep and study tool as well. For example, girls can take quizzes the night before a test as part of their test prep for class the next day. We also use technology through our library. We have an amazing, amazing library. Our librarians are very interactive with our students and our faculty. They help co-teach more than 250 classes every year with our teachers. Our girls have access to more than 30 electronic databases in addition to just thousands of books within our library. And then at the middle level, we have a bring your own device program for our middle level students. So they have a companion device that they can use to assist them in their learning in the classroom. We also have laptops accessible to our middle level students as well as Surface Pros. And again, they have full access to the upper level resources as well, like those electronic microscopes. So we look at technology as a partner in the curriculum that we are delivering. It really just enhances their learning. And they're the 21st century generation. So it just goes hand in hand.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm struck about the school is its sense of tradition and how that tradition builds community. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I do think that is unique for the school.
Yes, I really love all the aspects of tradition. I mean, traditions are a huge part of just being an NDP student. They're a big part of our life. And I think they really begin with the first day of school when you put on the uniform and you walk through the gateway as part of our gateway ceremony. And then they transcend your 4 or 7 years there with the NDP experience. We have traditions through our retreats. All of our classes go on class-level retreats, student retreats. We also have traditions through through student activities. I think we're most well known for our gym meet tradition, mm-hmm. which is where I think the roots of our sisterhood are really laid. And if you know, we have Christmas traditions through tree trim, again, another student co-curricular activity that is there for our students, and liturgies. Liturgies are a big part of our tradition base. There isn't one tradition at NDP that doesn't begin with Mass, mm-hmm. and I think that's very important for people to know.
Yeah, that was my next question. I think that there's a direct connection between the traditions there and the spirituality that's so pervasive at Notre Dame, and obviously that is a direct result of the oversight and the sponsorship of the school sisters. So can you talk a bit about their presence? Obviously, the headmistress is a school sister. Maybe there aren't as many nuns there today as there were, but it's ever present.
Yes. I would say mission integration is definitely alive and well at NDP. We have an amazing female leader at the helm of our school. She is a school sister of Notre Dame, Sister Patricia. She's very visionary. I think her energy and excitement to keep the mission of the SSNDs alive and vibrant at Notre Dame seeps into everyday life. And, you know, just some examples like that, you know, our one of our prongs to our mission is service. And then another prong is social justice. It's very important for those who are being educated through an SSND mission to know how you go out and transform the world through service. We have, you know, the longest running service program in the Baltimore area for a Catholic school. We do it in a variety of ways. We celebrated our 30th anniversary of Camp Umoja this past summer. Umoja is Swahili for unity, and unity and community are what Notre Dame is about, and it really transcends because of the SSND mission and philosophy. So it's about teaching our students to go out and change the world and help those who can't help themselves. It's also teaching them to be loving, just, and wise women, to be self-advocates, to help change, to help right or wrong, even in their own world when they need to, but also trying to have a more global impact mm-hmm. as well. But it really comes down to the philosophy of the School Sisters of Notre Dame, educating girls to be loving, just, and wise. And it really starts at the top and infiltrates to the students through local service opportunities, as well as national service opportunities. Our girls can go to Mississippi for Habitat for Humanity over spring break. They can now go to Costa Rica, and they can help save the sloths. That's service, but it's also animal science, all mm-hmm. combined into one. They can go to El Salvador as well, and we have a 25-year partnership with the community in El Salvador, and that's life-changing. People think it's life-changing for the communities that we help. It's actually more life-changing, I think, for our students.
I would imagine it would be. I'm going to challenge you in the time we have left to okay. talk about your facilities, your fine arts, and your sports programs.
All right. I'm going to start with facilities because they're sort of quick and easy. Our facilities include a 60-acre campus. We also have a state-of-the-art sports and fitness center. We're actually the only girls' school in the area that can field JV and varsity-level teams in all 14 IAAM sports. We have three wings of classrooms. We have a performing arts facility. We have a 1,000-seat auditorium, and we have a full-size indoor Olympic swimming pool. So we have fabulous, fabulous facilities that are used both by our students as well as the community. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, I could talk all day about our fine arts, our performing arts, our visual arts. We have an award-winning music program, and I'm very passionate about that because if your daughter is inclined to sing or to play an instrument, whether it's band or orchestra, NDP is a great place to do that. We're nationally recognized. Our band, our chorus, and our orchestra, they go to an annual spring competition called an adjudication every year. They always win the top awards, whether it's gold or superior. Our music director is so passionate about our music program. It's my understanding when he first started, he had quite a small number of girls, maybe only 12 to 15. He now has a band that exceeds 65 students. So he's really done something special. But I also really believe that every person at NDP lives his or her vocation. I genuinely believe that. We have an award-winning performing arts program as well, a very strong theater program. We put on shows. We do co-collaborate with some of the other area schools. So, you know, the girls can have interaction outside of NDP with other students and with peer institutions.
What's the best way for people to learn about NDP online?
I always drive them to our website first, and our website is www.notredomeprep.com. We're actually also on Facebook and Twitter, so feel free to like us or follow us there. Our open house is Saturday, October 17th at 8:30 a.m. Please feel free to join us there. And again, visit our website for all admission-related activities. Take a tour one afternoon a month. Come to a coffee event with our headmistress. Just visit our website, notredomeprep.com, to learn more.
Maureen Cannon from Notre Dame Preparatory School, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean. It was great. I appreciate it.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The Archdiocese has welcomed 8 men into formation to become priests. Among the new seminarians is an airborne evangelizer. Before he considered becoming a priest, 54-year-old Jim Boers used to travel 3 of every 4 weeks to Portland, Oregon. On the plane, he would start conversations with his seatmates. "All I did was ask them questions," Jim said, adding that he let the Holy Spirit do its work. "I would ultimately get to the point where, 10 to 15 minutes into the conversation, I would talk about God," Jim said. Over his 3-decade career, Jim estimates that his 800 or so conversations have been the starting point of 30 conversions to the Catholic faith, not to mention all the seeds planted. Learn more about Jim and the other new seminarians at catholicreview.org or in our print edition, out now. Also online and in print, meet Kathy and Oh Sung Kwon, a pair of exchange students from Seoul, South Korea. Kathy is attending classes at Mount DeSales Academy. Oh Sung goes to Loyola Blakefield. "It's a big adjustment, to be sure, but the sister and brother are thriving." Oh Sung is in the cybersecurity club, the car club, the robotics club, and the table tennis club at Loyola Blakefield. Kathy, who hopes to go to college in the U.S., said that the adjustment was really hard at first. But, she added, "now that I'm used to it, I have a lot of friends." Learn more about what the Kwons are learning and what the American students are learning from the Kwons in the Catholic Review. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online at catholicreview.org. Again, online, that's catholicreview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We continue today with our discussion with Father Michael Roach about the history of the Archdiocese, and in particular, the personalities of the Archbishops of Baltimore. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Grand to be here.
So we're speaking today about Archbishop James Bailey, the 8th Archbishop of Baltimore, and is perhaps best known for his famous aunt. Is that correct?
Oh, Elizabeth Ann Bailey Seton, surely. But his cousins as well. He was a cousin to Teddy Roosevelt and to Eleanor Roosevelt, a more distant cousin to FDR.
And what do we know about the Archbishop in terms of his background? He studied to be an Episcopal priest. Is that right?
Indeed. He really was part of the Oxford movement, that wonderful movement that brought many Anglicans into the Roman Catholic Church in the 19th century, imported from England, of course, with great leadership and the people like Blessed John Henry Newman. It began to influence America, and you can see any number of men who came into the church, into the priesthood, via that movement, and James Roosevelt Bailey was certainly one of them.
And had been mentored by Cardinal McCloskey and served in Newark before coming to Baltimore.
Absolutely. Was in Newark, a native New Yorker, of course, but served in Newark, and then was named to Baltimore. I think there was probably some surprise in his being named here.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like he was a pretty well-educated man.
He was. Went to Trinity in Hartford and was a very well-educated man, an aristocrat, as a matter of fact.
Was it unusual, or would it have been unusual? It seems like in today's age, an archbishop of a prominent archdiocese having begun his religious life as an Episcopalian would have been kind of strange preparation.
Absolutely. But there was a great wave of converts in mid-century. Some of the finest men we had came into the church later in life as adults.
And he only served here 5 years, I believe. Looking at his history that he had something called Bright's disease, and that maybe his health had not been very good.
That's a kidney disease, actually, and they used to put all of the kidney diseases under the heading of Bright's disease in the old days.
Okay. And that hampered him?
It did, and it is said that he didn't like Baltimore and Baltimore didn't like him. Mm. So he was appalled by some of the things he found here. For example, they hadn't paid the debt on the old cathedral yet, and he thought there was a certain southern indolence down here he wasn't used to in New York.
Mm. Now that it seems he was a pretty efficient administrator, and that would tie into that, I suppose.
Oh, yes. He got a lot done, as a matter of fact. In a few years, he got a lot done administratively. He should be better remembered than he is, I believe.
Anything to you stand out in terms of what he was able to accomplish administratively?
Well, paying debts, organizing things. I think he also may have been the one who instituted the cathedraticum, the cathedral tax, the percentage that every parish has to pay to the archdiocese.
Seemed like he instituted annual reports that parishes were to file,
right?
And also created societies, within parishes,
right?
So he saw that there was a grassroots element, I suppose, to helping to
right. He was very up to date. He knew everything that the church was suggesting from his New York days, and tried to implement it in Baltimore, which was still a very southern city at the time.
Were there causes that you recall that were near to him? It seems like the temperance movement is connected to him, and certainly Catholic schools and serving the poor were important to him as well.
Indeed. The temperance movement was very essential for the immigrant community especially, and very popular, really. Practically every parish at one time or another has established a temperance society to try to combat the perils of drinking.
Mm. And what... take us back to that time and place in history. What was the thinking about alcohol and its effects on society, and why there would be a temperance movement?
You find some marvelous preaching by the Redemptorists and the like against the grog shop owners and parish missions. Much of the talk was against drunkenness and the terrible injury it does to every family, and it had to be a terrible scourge at the time. So, because there's so much preaching against it, and Roosevelt Bailey also was very strong on this. Interestingly enough, often the bishops who came from the wealthiest backgrounds often had the most concern for the poor, and I think that was true with James Roosevelt Bailey as well. Came from a very well-to-do background and yet had a passion for the poor.
Interesting. It seems that there was some obvious disconnect between his personality and maybe his northern sensibility and what he perceived to be as a southern.
Right. It is said he made a point to die out of town and was buried out of town. He's buried next to his aunt up in St. Joe's Emmitsburg, as a matter of fact.
Interesting. So final word on James Roosevelt Bailey, administrator and...
Underrated. I think... As happened a number of times in the 19th century, not just the 19th century, there were some powerful pastors in the diocese that had a great deal of antipathy toward him, and they could make it a little rough for him.
That could make it rough for any archbishop, right?
Indeed, so they say.
Yes, well, right. Father Roach, thank you for sharing some insights into Archbishop James Bailey.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor Mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen. You will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.